The NBA playoffs are here, and with FanDuel, your group chat's about to be going off. Because right now, new customers can bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets if you win. And with live bets, your heart emojis will really be racing from tip-off to the final buzzer. Plus, when you win, you'll get paid faster than your friends can send you a victory gift. Or is it GIF? Who cares? You won! So get the word out to your crew and download FanDuel today. New customers bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets if you win. Make every moment more with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Official partner of the NBA.
21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See full terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hello and welcome to Adam Ruins Everything, the podcast. I'm your host, Adam Conover, and I'm also the host of Adam Ruins Everything, a television show on True TV. You can find clips and full episodes of that show, and look, it's a really cool show. We tell you the awful truth behind every misconception you've ever had in your whole life. That's basically the premise. You can find clips and full episodes at truetv.com/AdamRuinsEverything and the Watch True TV app. So normally on this show, I talk to researchers, academics, and experts about the work they do and why it's so important and cool. Today, we're changing that up a little bit. I'm going to talk to one of my co-stars of Adam Ruins Everything, Haley Marie Norman, who appeared on last season's Adam Ruins Everything. If you might have seen, we had a whole big plot line where my character falls in love with her, and then I interrupt her in the bathroom, and I bother her. And then, there's a thrilling conclusion, which if you haven't seen the show, I don't want to spoil for you. We'll actually get into it in the interview, so it'll be spoiled for you in about 30 seconds. So look, this one's a little bit different. She's just a friend of mine who I always enjoy talking to. She's one of the most charismatic and fun people you'll ever meet. I know the audience of our show loves her, so we said, hey, let's do a podcast where we chat with her. And I know that everyone who watches the show loves her, so we said, hey, let's do a podcast where we hang out and have some fun. So that's what you're going to hear this week. I'm so excited to have Haley join us in the studio today. So, hey, let's get to the interview. Haley, thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh, my God. Thank you so much for having me.
that's the kind of – that right there is the kind of excitement that makes people want Haley Marie Norman in their project. You have such an upbeat presence that is like it makes you very fun to be around.
Oh, that's so sweet. I feel like it's so genuine because I had such an amazing time being on Adam Ruins Everything, and so I feel like I'm like extra upbeat around you guys, but it's just because I'm like truly so excited to be around you guys.
Well, the audience of our show really kind of latched onto you a little bit. Specifically, people tweeted me all the time. Like, no, why did you kill Haley? Why did Haley die? I ship Adam and... That's the funniest part. When people literally tweet me and they're like, I shipped Adam and Haley. So if you guys don't know, shipping is when people decide that two people in a show are destined to be together. So they say it's a verb. I ship, as in I think they should be in a relationship together. And I was like, this is crazy because we're 95% an informational show. And then at the beginning of the ending of the episodes, we said we'll put little story beats in. And the episode was Adam sees Haley and he's like, ooh, I kind of like her. And then he bothers her in one episode. And then they almost go on a date. But she dies. It's like the tiniest little relationship.
But they loved it.
People were like, oh, we want to see them get together. And they were heartbroken when your character, and by the way, your character's death is the most you literally slip and fall and hit your head and die.
And people are like, I feel like people will never get over it. There's like, no, everywhere I go, people will come up to me and they'll be like, I loved you on Adam Ruins Everything. I'm so mad you died. Like, I almost texted you about this because I literally was at a Black Lives Matter meeting like a month ago. And this woman came up to me and she was like, I am so mad. And I was like, yeah, I'm so mad too. Blah, blah. And then she's like, no, I'm mad that they killed you on Adam Ruins Everything.
I didn't know that that was part of the Black Lives Matter platform, that they also worried about fictional deaths.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
It's a little
fictional black deaths.
Jesus.
Oh, my God. It was really funny. It was after the meeting, and it was just like, you've got fans everywhere. You have fans literally everywhere. But I do get a lot of those. I get those same tweets. People, you know. And I'm always like, which ones do I like? Because you also did a jail episode.
Yeah.
And someone was like, actually, Adam, you're the one that should be locked up for killing Hailey Reiner. And I was like, okay. I was like, that one seems really aggressive. I won't like that one.
That's a little intense. Yeah. Also, well, I'm happy that people know that I write the show to the extent, I mean, we have a writer's room, but that they know I'm creatively, you know, in control of it, to the where they know they're watching the show and they simultaneously know it's me, the person killing your character.
Yes.
It was to the point that when, after we, you know, wrote the character dying, I was like, oh, I'm bummed Hailey can't be on the show anymore, because it was, it was so fun to have you there, and you're so fun to watch on screen, but there was a lot of talk in the writer's room of like, well, could she like come back as a ghost? Cause like, and people have asked that cause they know that our show kind of does anything, and
yeah.
They're like, oh, she could come back as a ghost or something. I'm like, no, the point of the episode is that Adam, my character of Adam, had to learn what death is and had to, like, you know, that's the whole point, is that, like, you can't take it back, you know, that, like, it's something that you can't, you know, that's sort of the striking thing about it, that you can't learn it away, you can't wish it away, it's so final, and there's no getting out of it. And I was like, well, if we bring her back in some way, that's going to, like, ruin that message. But on the other hand, it's like, well, I wish Hailey could be on set again.
Oh, that's so sweet. That means so much to me. It was like, that set was the best environment. It was just so lovely to be a part of it. It truly was.
I'm really happy you said it. It's very important to me that when people, there's all different shows that people work on, you know, people work in different writers' rooms, people go on different sets, and there's good shows and bad shows, but you also hear stories about people say, oh my god, that's a great show, but like, oh, I hated working on it, or like the person, like, it was so tense or whatever. You hear those things. It was always very important to me when we were making the show that, like, I want people to leave and go, like, I had a great time working on that, I was treated respectfully, you know my creative voice got out there, or I got to have fun, or just at least, or even just the food was good or whatever. You know, I just want to make sure that it's like that people feel like they're treated well. So I'm really glad to hear that. Well, how did you get started were you a little baby?
I was a little baby, a little tiny baby.
You're a baby actor person.
Yes, I was a baby actor person. So I wanted to be an actress my whole life. Like, I don't remember ever wanting to do anything else. And so when I was a little girl, I was discovered by Cindy Crawford. I was like, isn't that so funny?
Yes.
I was at a restaurant in Malibu, and she, like, I was with my dad, and she came up to my dad, and she was like, you need to get your kid into modeling. And she gave us her agent's business card, and my parents called.
Are you kidding?
No, I know. It seems like such a lie.
How old were you?
I would think I was maybe six. I've asked my parents multiple times, like, did that really happen? Are you lying to me? And they both swear, hands down, that happened.
Okay, first of all, that sounds like a creepy thing for Cindy Crawford to be doing, to be going up to parents of children and being like,
think your kid needs
hey,
some
I'm Cindy Crawford, let me tell you. Your baby's hot. Is that what's going on? Or what is it?
Like, I'm so scared that, like, one day Cindy Crawford's going to hear this story and be like, that's a total lie. Hailey Marie Norman's a liar. But my parents swear up and down that this actually happened.
Wow.
And I did start, like, doing print work and stuff after that. So I'm just, like, choosing to believe them. Although my dad did, like, take a photo of mine and, like, glue it on a Wheaties box. And for the longest time, I thought I was on a Wheaties box.
Well, you thought you believed him? You were like,
because I was just so young. I was so young.
You were like, I scored the Wheaties account. I'm on Wheaties. It's funny, though, because I have friends who similarly wanted to be actors or models when they were kids. But I have more than one friend whose parents were suckered by, like, a scammy child modeling agency to be like, they're like, your kids got the goods.
Yeah.
You got to buy $1,000 of headshots. And then they do. And so I have multiple friends who have their kid headshots from their non-existent child acting careers, where it was sort of like, paying for the dream of maybe. But you actually did it. You were actually working as a kid.
Yeah, I feel like those scams happen so much, but maybe, like, less in L.A. Or my parents aren't in the industry, but I think because we are in L.A. and I do have, like, some distant relatives that are in it, they were like, like aware of those scams. So we got lucky because that is a real thing. So I started modeling when I was a kid. I started modeling like all the time when I was a kid, and doing like theater and commercials and little television shows. And then by the time I got to high school, I transferred because I also like loved school. So I went to, my first 2 years, I went to like an all girls school, and then I transferred to a performing arts high school my last 2 years. And then after that, I went to a theater conservatory. And so when I was in high school and when I was at the theater conservatory, I wasn't like pursuing acting because I was just studying it. But I was really lucky because when I graduated, I just started like working. You know, I just started like working regularly.
Yeah. Do you feel lucky that stuff worked out? Because so many people do those things and like they go to the performing arts high school and they're like, I'm going to be an actor. And then it never happens. And then it's like, you know what I mean? Like I always have that in the back of my head when, you know, even in my own position it's almost like, what's the word for it's like survivor's guilt or whatever that like that when I think about like working, you know, in the trenches, like as a young comic, like trying to get, you know, like, oh, open mics and stuff like that. And I was like, oh, I like, you know, I'm the one who's working now. But I think about everybody else who I'm like, ah, they cared and they were just as funny as me. And they just but it didn't happen. You know,
I definitely don't have guilt about it. But
good, because guilt. I'm not saying guilt makes you a better person to feel guilty or anything, but
I'm like the only person I know that's like still doing it. Mm. And to be totally honest with you, there used to be a part of me that felt like, yeah, I really like I hung in there and I've sacrificed everything, and I'm, you know, because that's what it takes. But now just that I've like gotten like now that I'm just I've gotten older and I'm. Can understand like the beauty of like a regular life and stuff. I'm like, oh, I think that there is like kind of a power and a beauty to being like, I'm not going to chase this dream. And it, like, because really success has so little to do with talent and it has so little to do with so many things. So I do kind of understand why so many people give up. And I think that that's really taking power into their own hands. So that was just like a mind shift for me. But.
That's a really interesting way to put it. Yeah. So by not chasing it so hard, you're sort of taking away its power over you as a dream.
Yeah, just sort of being like, okay, this is a really crazy business. There's no promise at the end. Like, really, you've invested your youth for something that might never pay off.
Yeah.
I feel like this is just so depressing. But I feel like there is really a beauty to being like, well, I'm going to move back home. I mean, my home is LA, so really I'm kind of stuck here doing this forever. But I feel like when people are like, you know, I'm going to move back home and get married and like have a family or whatever. Whereas before, like the younger kind of maybe less understanding of life me would have been like, they didn't have what it took to really like hang in there.
Yeah.
Now I'm like, yeah, that's like having a normal, regular life is a beautiful thing, you know?
Yeah. And yeah, it's a good point because I often think about, you know, just how lucky I am to be like doing the show and doing everything else. Like, I don't feel like I am doing the show because I like put in the time and I'm so great and everything. It's like, well, I'll give myself credit for what I'm good at, but also like it's an incredible amount of like privilege and luck and like being in the right place at just the right time. And just, you know, if I go through like the story of like why we're sitting here today, there's so many things of like a friend happened to give me just the right recommendation at exactly the time to get the job at College Humor that got me, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there's no amount of like working harder that could have made those things fall into place or like fighting or I'm going to chase that dream and I'm going to climb that mountain. It's like there's so much about it that's seemingly random that makes sense. Like that pushing is like something that is not like totally virtuous or connected, like whether or not it happens.
Yeah, you think that, because I was one of those people that, like, I worked so hard and I didn't have, like, a regular life. Like, I was just so focused on what I was doing. And I guess if I could go back in time, I honestly wouldn't change anything because my career is flourishing. I'm lucky. I'm working, you know. But actually, you know what I would change? And I think what makes it different is, like, because I came up through a theater conservatory and because my whole thing was being, like, this serious actress, you know, there's this kind of like idea of what it means to be like a good actor. And it's like honoring the writer's words and putting yourself, you know, and doing all this stuff. And I wish that I would have learned earlier to like really take a lot of that power back into my own hands and start writing myself. Because my friends now who are having the most success are people who told me, so when we were shooting Adam Ruins Everything, I remember having this conversation with Emily and she was like, I've never booked an acting job that was someone else's, like this for something that I auditioned for that was someone else's project.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, that's, and she's killing it. You know what I mean?
She's one of the funniest
comic actresses. Yeah. She's so funny. She's so good. And all my friends who are doing like really great are right now are people who are writing their own material and then are acting in it.
Yeah.
But I came up through this different way that was like of, you know, learning Shakespeare. And I'm not saying that my friends who are writers and stuff didn't learn that, but like we like where it was like you were an actor, you weren't a writer, you know?
Yeah.
And so now it's been really great for me to like write and create on my own and do my own comedic things, because I feel like that is, it's not, I was going to say the wave of like the future, but it's not even the future. It's like now. Like I think that the business has changed so much since I've been in it that I truly think you can really only get so far just from auditioning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I always thought that like, you know, I mean, you know, I act, I did like, you know, theater and in high school and college too. And like, you know, I act in like comedy stuff, but then when I, you know, I've always been a comedian, you know, in a sketch group where we're like writer performers and then as a stand up comic and stuff like that. And I remember even just realizing before I was working at all going like, oh man, it's so much better to go to an audition as a comedian, because then you're kind of like, hey, look, here's what I do, man. You know, like this is my comedic voice. I'm working on something myself, on my own, you know, sort of like artist here, you know. And then like you can take it or leave it. Whereas like if all you're trying to do is act like exclusively, you're sort of like at the mercy of those people in that room. Is like you're like, oh, I hope you like me because I don't work at all if you don't, you know. Whereas like hopefully if you're a comedian, you're like, well, hey, I still got a spot tonight, you know, that I'm gonna go do whether or not I book this, you know. And so I always thought of that as being like, oh man, being an actor is like, kind of the hardest thing, because you have so much less control over the work that you're doing.
Yeah. It's, I mean, that's 100% true. That's really true. And another thing too, is like we were talking about, like, I'm so lucky that when I graduated, I like got an agent, or actually I went back to the agent that I had as a kid and she got me working as an adult. And then I transferred to like, you know, just bigger, better like agents and management companies over time. But some of my friends that are just like so talented and they've been doing this for so long, like can't even get an agent, you know?
Yeah.
So it is, it's just a crazy business, but I love it. But yeah, you're absolutely right. Like going into those rooms as a comedian is amazing. And it took me a while to sort of get to the point where I'm like, well, this is who I am and this is what I bring to the table. And like, hopefully it works out. And if it doesn't, oh, well, it's fine if it doesn't, you know, because they, you know, I was always taught that it was like, it was our job to be exactly what they wanted. And if we weren't, then it was like on us, like that I could have been like a better nerd or a better slave or whatever role I was auditioning for. You know?
Yeah, that's hard to be. That's like a weird thing to instill in a profession. It's like, it's on you if you're not exactly what they want. But like a lot of times those people in those rooms who are making those decisions, like they're stupid and they don't know what they want
or they're
making a wrong choice. And like, it's so weird to put yourself subservient to everyone you come in contact with in that way.
Yeah. So, and I think that that's part of the reason why, like, yeah, so many people that I like came up with stopped doing this. And so now I don't do that. I'm like, this is what I know that I'm good at what I do. And I love this, you know? So it is just like, it's either going to work out or not. Cause that's another thing that you said, like they don't know what they want. You know, they don't know what they want. They already have an idea in their head, or there's already an offer out to someone, or, you know, or you get it.
Oh, those are the four options. I have to ask about a specific job that I know that you did, because you were on Deal or No Deal, were you not?
Yes, I was.
You were one of the, you held the briefcase on Deal or No Deal.
Yes, I was number 25. I was the, yes.
Wait, I didn't realize, I just have a lot of questions about this. I didn't realize you had your own assigned number.
Yes, so number 25 is like my favorite number now till the day I die. It's
really?
Like, if there's like open parking spaces somewhere and like there's one that's 25, I'm like, oh, I'll take that. Or like when I go work out and there's like a locker and there's a locker number 25, I'm like, I get so annoyed if someone's already put their stuff in locker 25.
So
I'm
it like, sounds like good experience if you have a good relationship with the number, right? Because if you had a bad time, you would be like, I hate 25. Worst number ever.
No, it was that show was the first thing that like really put me on the map because they mic'd me for every episode, and they didn't do that with a lot of the girls.
They put a microphone on me.
Yeah, so me and Howie would interact like regularly. They did like special episode. They did a whole episode around my hair. They did another episode where they let me be the banker. And then they did another episode where they let me open up all the cases. So for me, it was like that show was like everywhere I went. People were like, oh my God, Haley, or a lot of times they'd go number 25.
Yeah.
And I became number 25 because my hair was just so, my hair was so big that when, on my first day there, the producer was like, your hair is so big, you have to be in the back.
Really?
And so 25 was in the back.
In the back
over row. To the corner. But, like, it was, and that show, yeah, it was my grandma's favorite show because I came in.
Man, I watched a lot of that show in what, 2007 or whatever, whenever it was. I don't know when it was. I just remember being in my, like, first shitty apartment out of college, and we had, like, a little shitty, like, pre-HD TV.
Yeah.
But for some reason, we're paying for cable. I don't know why I was paying for cable at that point in my life, but I remember me and my roommate Raphael just watching a lot of Deal or No Deal because it's very compelling yeah. Like almost like meditative television where it's just like this case, they're opening the cases and what was that experience like as a human person, which you are, to like be standing on stage holding a briefcase for like a good hour or so and then open it? Like,
no, way longer. Those days were insanely long. And that was the thing. That was like, it sounds so dumb, but it's like, it was really like hard work. And it's like doing like modeling stuff, which I don't care. I don't do model. Like, I don't model anymore, but it really is like so much. It's like a lot more work than people would think. So we were in like, you know, these little dresses that were all like perfectly tailored to all of us. So we would spend hours and hours just in wardrobe getting these dresses like perfectly fit to us. And like our bodies like kind of couldn't change a lot. Like they would notice every little like ounce or whatever.
Oh, like, really? They'd so be like, oh, we got to retailor the dress.
They just wouldn't retailor it. That you'd get a call after the fitting that's like, you need to lose weight.
Oh, my God.
Like, you need to, you know, so that was like, and I'm not naturally like, I'm a naturally like very curvy person. So I was, you know, I just, you know, was like very regimented in like what I ate and like working out no matter what, like every day.
Wow.
So that's something I wouldn't want to have to do again. But so, and then because the dresses would like wrinkle easier, like depending on where we were in the game and if your number hadn't been called yet. Or if your number had been called, but there was another contestant, sometimes we actually couldn't, like, sit down because it was so, like, fast-paced. So you'd be – and they wouldn't have time to, like, steam all of our dresses. So a lot of times after your number was called and you were backstage, you still had to be, like, standing because we were wearing these little dresses.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of – I mean, it was a lot. And you're – I mean, when we would go backstage, we could take our heels off, but you're still standing on that stage for hours and hours. I mean, the days were, like – we would do like 14-hour days, and that was only to do like, you know, maybe an episode or two. Like, it took a long, long time.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. But I did love it because it was – I really did root for the contestants. And so it was really fun kind of being a part of like – someone's dream and something that was like such a momentous occasion for them.
Yeah.
And I think maybe that's why like I had such a positive, like the audience and people at home reacted so positively to me because like I genuinely was like really like rooting for these people. And like I think there was a couple episodes where like I started crying if someone didn't win.
Yeah, there was one of those game shows that did a really good job of like making you identify with the person and making it really intense.
Yeah.
I remember, what was it? I heard a podcast, What's About, or read an article somewhere about like the amount of money that the banker offers is actually this really interesting example of like psychological manipulation where they use like loss aversion, which is the idea that like people are more upset when they think they lost something than if they didn't have the opportunity to win. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
like if you think you have something and then you lose money, you're more upset by the idea of losing something. So
that's fascinating.
So they used that like psychological method to like give people exactly the right offer, you know what I mean, that would cause them to behave in the way that the show wanted to. Because that's like the only thing that's really – the only like moving part of the show is like what's the offer going to be,
yeah.
right? Because everything else is basically random, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, do I want to take this offer or not, right, that's given to me.
Right. That – what you just described has to be like the most fascinating part of the show. Like I want to go home and Google that. That's so cool.
Yeah.
What's it called? The loss?
It's called loss aversion.
Loss aversion.
Yeah. It's like
– loss aversion.
And,
okay.
And so basically they could get people – the idea was – you know, the whole idea is, okay, like if you're doing the show like a robot, they give you an offer for, you know, there's like an expected value of what could potentially be in the rest of the briefcases, and they give you an offer based on that. And so if you were a robot, you could like go beep, boop, beep, boop, like the offer is more or less than whatever, you know, the average of everything left in the cases are, you
yeah.
know, if you're like being a perfectly rational gambler. But people see the amount of the offer as being like an amount of money that they already have. You know what I mean? So it's like, okay, you know, it's like the thing of like, okay, say you're offered like 10 grand and there's like the $1 case, there's the $1 million case or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you're like, and you're looking at it and you're like, well, on average, if I did this 100 times, I should open the next case or whatever. But people don't want to lose that guaranteed 10 grand
yeah.
so much, you know? And so they would use that. I forget exactly what the context of what I read was, but they, you know, they would use that in order to manipulate people. And so it was like a very interesting thing where it's like one of the only game shows I know of where it's sort of like the producers are kind of like working, like competing with the people playing in a certain way. It's really interesting.
That's very cool.
Well, I'm here talking to Haley Marie Norman. We'll be back in just a moment, so please stick around.
From the dawn of time, one podcast has unlocked the secrets of science and technology to enrich the lives of billions. And now, after a year where they've unlocked the golden age of knowledge, they're about to hit warp speed and go stratospheric.
Wait, hold up.
On Oh No, Ross and Carrie, we don't make extraordinary claims. We investigate them.
We go undercover with fringe religious groups, investigate paranormal claims, and we participate in pseudoscientific medical treatments and then report our findings to you.
And yes, we've even investigated Scientology.
Shh, Ross, shh. New episodes every month at MaximumFun.org.
Oh No, Ross and Carrie. They show up so you don't have to.
Welcome back to Anna Ruins Everything, the podcast. I am here talking to one of my fellow actors who has appeared on the show, Haley Marie Norman. Something I'm really interested in about people are what are your sort of like core principles of how you orient yourself towards the world that cause you to, you know, that like keep you going. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I really care about social justice.
Mm-hmm.
I care about the awful things that are happening in the world right now. And I was thinking, you know, when I was like driving here, I'm like planning, I'm getting married soon.
Yeah. Oh, congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you. And I like didn't want to, and it's funny, I thought about you because it's like, I didn't want a diamond. I don't want like a giant
yeah.
wedding. I don't even know if I want a wedding. Like we're really thinking about eloping. And that's something that I've always felt because the idea of just these like really extravagant weddings where people are spending so much money on it, that just doesn't like jive with who I am as a person.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like that was always like kind of such a, I don't want to say like a radical thing to say, but I feel like people kind of like think weird about you if you're like, I don't want a big wedding, I don't care about that stuff, or
yeah.
they feel like you're judging them or something.
Well, a lot of people say that they don't want a big wedding and then they still get a big
wedding.
And
then they still do a big wedding.
Yeah.
I'm definitely not doing that. But so I was really happy like when you did your episode of the show that talked about, you know, basically just how like weddings are a racket and stuff like
yeah.
that, because I'm like, okay, good. Now I can like actually like point to like something else to be like, well, yeah, I mean, instead of people just like thinking that I'm being like weird or difficult or something by like not wanting a big wedding.
That's good.
So those are kind of the things I care about.
Did you think of any differently? You were in the death episode
yeah.
when you were, well, first of all, thank you for saying you got something out of the show that way. When you were, I was curious when you were like lying in the coffin in the death episode,
yeah.
did you consider your own mortality at all?
I did, and it was really weird because everything I shot for like a while after that I died in, and I started, like literally every project. And so then I started to be like, what if I actually die? Like, I started getting, like, weirdly superstitious about it. And I was like, this is a sign. Like, what if I actually died, like, right around that time? So already the window for, like, it having been weird has passed. But I was like, what if I die soon? That's going to have meant that every project I did, I died in, and then I died for real. And then I started to kind of, like, freak myself out about it. And then I was like, oh, this is, like, weird and superstitious. I'm not going to die. I didn't die. But the idea of our...
You are going to die one day.
I'm going to die. And you know what? I've never been scared about... dying. I've never been scared about dying. I've always been okay with it. Lately, I guess I've started to get worried about, like, the different ways that I don't want to die, but also, especially now I have a fiance and stuff, I have anxiety about the people around me dying.
Yeah.
But I'm okay with dying.
Yeah.
But then it is weird to think, because when you die, like, your essence in this, like, you're done.
Yeah.
And, I mean, is it weird that sometimes I think, like, a lot of people would be really sad if I died, and that gives me comfort?
Yeah, no, that's a common thing. I mean, I used to fantasize when I was a kid, when I was really, I had, like, the worst possible self-esteem, but you know, this is not an uncommon fantasy, but I used to fantasize about faking my own death and then going to my funeral to hear people say sad things about me.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's how I'll know. Like, and I honestly wanted to hear the speeches so that I would know that people loved me.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I'm glad that you just did that as a kid, because I'm still here as an adult being like,
yeah,
they'd be really sad if I died.
Yeah.
I wonder what they would say.
Yeah. I actually, I remember that when my relationship with Lisa started to get serious, I remember thinking that, like picturing if something happened to me and then what her reaction would be, and that would make me very emotional. More than my own worry about myself dying, it would be about, like, what the reaction, you know, what the impact on her that would be. And that's what upsets me more now. And I think that's part of what love is.
having that
caring about the other person's reaction more than your own. More than how it would impact you, I guess. I don't know. There's something – I don't know. Thinking about death is such a – it's one of those, like universal things that is going to impact everyone, that is absolutely – final is the wrong word. It's like supernatural in the degree to which the non-existence is like inevitable and going to happen. Does that make sense? And so
it does.
It's like when you think about it, it's when your mind starts to, like, you know, coil around and like go to more interesting places because it's like, oh, it's like the singularity, you know, the idea of the singularity.
Yeah.
It's like where, like, past that point, like, everything is different, you know?
Yeah. Everything is different. Everything is different. Just, like, meeting people, like, loving a new person and stuff. It's just, like, one... Like, I was thinking that the other day, because I was like, oh, I'm going to have, like, in-laws now. And these are... like, I'm literally... And my fiancé has, like, four sisters. I'm like, I'm just inviting more people into my life who I'm going to be, like, sad about when they die or if something happens to someone. And it's like, I kind of am at a point where I'm like, I don't want to love another, like, one more human being or whatever. I don't want to have to worry or be sad about, like, any other person because it's already, like, too much, you know? Yeah.
Well, that's the paradox of love, right? Is that when you get that joy, but then you have that concern and that worry about the other person in a way that's really that makes you, like, extremely vulnerable.
Totally.
I heard a great quote. I feel guilty for quoting Steve Jobs, but it's like Steve Jobs quote I heard once that I think is great. And it's not about technology or iPhones. It's about children, and it's about, like, the problem with children, the problem with having a child. I was like, wow, this is so perfectly put. Is that it's like as though your heart were running around outside of your body, and you can't control it. It's like something that is, like, so vital to you is you can't keep it safe because it's outside of you, and it's going to go. It's like, fuck, like, a piece of me is, like, running into the street, and it's going to get hit by a car. You know what I mean? It's like so. And I was like, wow, I really don't want kids. Is what I heard after hearing that quote.
That's so real. That's so real.
I was like, that is too intense. That is too intense and vulnerable. I'm sure there are many good things that come with it, but that was my reaction to, you know, that's sort of the agony, the ecstasy of it. But You know, that's like the weird irony of it is that you make yourself so vulnerable by feeling that way about anyone or anything.
Yeah, totally. Like even I was actually thinking that maybe it was even last night. I was like, I understand that idea of like the parents like waiting up all night when their kid's like not home and like,
yeah,
you know, and even like a mom. I just kept having a vision of like a mom like chain smoking and being like, I couldn't sleep. You weren't home. And I'm like, yeah, I understand that. Like where you just feel so sick. Also, I'm kind of in this situation where so. So Sam, my fiance, has a motorcycle.
Yeah.
And so when I met him, when I met him, I was like very into the motorcycle. of course.
I love the motorcycle. The motorcycle was very sexy.
We went on a 1100 mile road trip on this motorcycle.
Whoa.
Yeah. And it was like an awesome, great time.
That's cool.
It was very cool. But right after that motorcycle trip, I was in my car on the 101. I got hit by a drunk driver out of nowhere. There's nothing I could have
really?
Done. Yes. There's nothing I could have done to avoid it. I was stopped on the freeway. This girl came up. She hit me in an SUV. She was going 60 miles an hour, and I was stopped. And I was in a little Fiat, and she was in a big SUV. And so I got, like, my hip is messed up. My back is messed up. I had a concussion. I was, like,
oh my
God. Yeah, I was messed up, you know. As soon as it happened, I kept thinking in between trying not to pass out because I was like, I need to try to stay conscious. That I was really happy Sam wasn't in the car with me, but that I could never let him get on that motorcycle again. And so now his motorcycle is in Illinois and he's been wanting to like bring it back to LA and he's been putting it off for me. And I'm like, it's this thing because it's like, I know how much the motorcycle means to him and I want to let him have that and I want to whatever, but like,
yeah.
I'm like, you are, and he's being very sweet about it, and I know that he won't do the motorcycle if I don't want him to do the motorcycle. But I'm like, even that road, because I'm too injured now from my car accident to go with him from Illinois to LA. So I'm like, do you know what I would be going through those days where he was on a motorcycle trip? I mean, like, that can't happen, right?
Yeah, that's really intense. I mean,
it's so intense.
I mean, he's going to. If he keeps riding the motorcycle, he's just going to die on the motorcycle.
Something can happen, right?
Motorcycles are the most. Motorcycles are deadly.
They're deadly.
Every motorcycle owner dies in a motorcycle
oh my
accident.
God.
I think 100% of them. In my mind, they do.
I mean, everyone I know who had a motorcycle and was alive, they have a permanent limp. Something is always. And he's so lucky. Like, Sam has lived his life, like, very, you know, he's done whatever he wanted to do.
Yeah.
And he's so lucky. And I'm like, listen, you've tested your life 100 times. Now you're going to get, you have to stop.
Yeah.
No, I'm going to go home. That's the new thing I'm going to use. I'm going to be like, Adam Conover says everyone who rides a motorcycle dies on a motorcycle.
That's not a real stat. I forgot sometimes that people believe everything that I say as though it's a real stat. Folks at home, that is not an Adam Conover fact-checked stat. That's just my personal belief is that 100%. I mean, I am terrified of I would never set foot on a motorcycle you don't stand on them, but, you know, in any way, it's just like that any kind of motion in that way makes me very, makes me very upset. But yeah, I mean, I had a really good friend of mine, Adam Newman. Do you know Adam Newman? He's a comic. And I remember he got a big gig. I forget what it was. And he was like, I'm going to buy a motorcycle. And I was like, all right, you're going to die on that motorcycle. He was like, come on, don't say that. I did it. I was trolling him. I was just like, I was busted balls. I was like, you're going to die on that motorcycle. You know, you're going to die on that motorcycle. And he was like, no, come on. Everyone says that. Oh, God. He got the motorcycle. And he was like, great. I'm so happy. And then I saw him a month later. I was like, hey, how's the motorcycle going? He's like, I sold it. It was too terrifying. I couldn't. I love it. I used to ride it. I rode it around 2 times. I had a great time. I can't do it. It's too dangerous.
Yeah.
Like, and he was a guy who had spent years wanting one. I mean, I get how if you like engines, you're like, I'm fucking sitting on an engine attached to wheels. I get how it's cool, but oh, man.
Yeah, it's not worth it.
It's just too obvious. It's just too obvious how your death will come. You know?
I'm so happy that that's how the Adam Newman story ended, because when you started telling it, I was like, this story cannot end with this guy dying.
Oh, God.
Please don't let the story end with this guy
dying. I wouldn't
dying.
Have started the story that way. We're like, you know Adam Newman? Funny story. He got a motorcycle and he died tragically, my good friend. That would be horrible if I did it that way. I heard once, this made me feel, because I'm not afraid of my death, but I do get scared in situations where, like, if I'm driving or, like, if I'm waiting on a subway track or if I'm at a high place where I'll envision how I could die. And, like, I get a little wigged out if, you know, when your death is, like, just a jump away,
yes.
You know, where, like, if you just swerve into those headlights or if you just, like, jump onto
yes.
those tracks or if you just, you know, and so I'll be like, and it'll make me really tense and I'll want to get out of that situation. Like, I'll go stand in the middle of the platform or I'll, you know, want to stop driving. And I read somewhere, this is another unsourced fact, unfortunately, but that there's a theory that when you're doing that, that's your when you mentally live out what that would be like. You know, you picture yourself jumping in front of the train and like your body being crumpled and it's like very upsetting. That's your brain stopping you from doing it. That like when you mentally rehearse it, that is like that actually ensures that you won't do the thing. You know, even though it's like,
yeah.
you know, you're standing there and you're like, well, I could jump and maybe I will and I'd better back off. You know, that rehearsal is actually stopping you from taking that action.
That's interesting because
it's like a survival mechanism.
When I'm in those situations, I will sometimes get anxiety because I'll be like, what if I just lost it right now and I jumped in front of those things? Like, so it's more of like, what if I have just some sort of crazy out of body experience where like I just make a really bad choice and I die? So my approach to it is different because it's in me like just having like a moment of insanity or something. But I bet that the result of that is still the same, which is me just being like, yeah, I don't want to end up like crumpled on those train tracks. Mm-hmm. So let me like go to the middle or whatever.
Okay, let me ask you this. I know you are a big animal person.
Yes.
And I know you're one of those, you're a vocal vegan.
Yes.
And you're an animal rights type person.
Yes.
Well, it's really interesting because we were having a conversation in our writer's room with some of the research and writing staff talking about like animal rights stuff. And I think a position that someone in our room had where I'm like, I agree with this on certain days, is that like, okay, even if I agree that, you know, I would like to reduce animal suffering and stuff like that, or that, you know, that it's, even if I were to agree that it's, that animals are things we should care about ethically, it's like, it shouldn't be number one on my list, right? That there's like way more important stuff in the world,
yeah.
and stuff like that. You know, I think that's a reaction a lot of people have. And
right.
as someone who I know that's one of your main things that you care about, I'm curious how you feel about that idea, or how you respond to that kind of idea. And by the way, I don't mean that to like...
Yeah, no, I'm really happy you asked me this.
Yeah.
I think that's an amazing question because there is this idea, because I'm also coming at it, you know, for I guess people who are listening to this and don't know me or whatever, I'm also a black woman. So I'm coming at this from many different perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
My first idea is there's this idea that I do believe in, that none of us are going to be free until all of us are free. And so that's one of the things that we talk about in Black Lives Matter. And that's the idea that and actually Angela Davis was just talking about this. I got to see her speak and it was amazing. And that's the idea that all lives will matter once black lives matter. And so I'm only saying that to say there's this idea that like none of us can be free until all of us can be free.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do think that like the way that we treat animals in this country is like horrid. And so I want all of us to have freedom, you know. But having said that, being a black woman, I know a lot of vegans. I've been in the vegan community for a long time. There are people who speak up just about animal rights and they don't speak up about when another, you know, innocent black person is shot. They're not speaking up about those things. And so there is a part of me, and this is coming from an animal activist, but there is a part of me that's like, how do you only care about the suffering of animals and you don't care about the suffering of all human beings?
Yeah.
I can be an animal rights activist, but I can also be a human rights activist. I don't have to choose. I think that we can this is all such very like sensitive topics and words that can be used around you, or like against you. So I'm like, I'm hoping that I'm like saying this all right, because I don't want anything I've said to be like to be misconstrued. But I think that we can fight for multiple causes at the same time.
Yeah.
I don't think that we have to pick and choose what's more important to us and let another, you know, just great suffering happen because we're like too busy focused on another thing. I think that we can and we should tackle it all to create a more empathetic, peaceful world for all of us.
Yeah.
Because what we do to like minorities and women and stuff in this country is awful.
Yeah.
And what we do to animals is awful.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to fight for all of those things. I'm going to fight for every injustice that I see. Does that sort of answer your question?
It answers part of it, and it raises some interesting other ideas. I mean, how do you feel about someone who sort of says, someone who says who only raises animal issues and then never talks about anything pertaining to humans, right? You would disagree with that person. What about someone who says like, well, look, I'm only going to focus on human issues. You know what I mean? Like I'm not concerned about animals that much. Does that make sense? Like if someone who has the flip side argument, because sometimes it seems like there are days that I feel like. I put them in a hierarchy. You know what I mean? Yeah. I'm like, well, let's do humans first. We'll do animals second. Yeah. I'll try to help out animals when I can. But in general, I'm looking out for people here. You know what I mean? I could come up with a lot of high-minded reasons for that where I'm like, well, look, humans are the ones who come up with ethics to begin with, you know? So we're always sort of talking about ourselves to a certain extent and you know, how much we care for each other has to come first, you know? And you can even look at, you know, you can even look at like environmental issues that way. Hey, when we're talking about the environment, we're talking about what it is for us, not for itself, you know, like about having sort of a human-centered view of the world, you know. But I could also see, you know, someone making the argument that's like, no, when we're talking about animal rights, we're not just talking about, hey, you know, being vegan because it's better for humans. We're saying because those animals have like rights, right? Like rights the same as humans have rights, you know.
And their suffering is real. I mean, these animals are really, they're smart. Mm-hmm. And what they're put through is just, it's awful. It's so inhumane. On top of that, it's like destroying our own health, our environment, whatever. But if someone just cared about human rights issues, I'm not going to turn them away at the march. You know what I mean? I understand that. And I'm going to be like happy that they're with me, fighting with me. And I would much rather that than someone who that is something like I can understand. And probably in the back of my head, I'd be like, we can work on that person. You know, that's something to me that I can relate to much more than someone who just puts animal rights over human rights. Because that is something I take issue with. Like, if you only care about animals, like, because there are a lot of shitty-ass people. Oh, are we allowed to curse?
Yeah. This ain't the radio.
There are a lot of shitty-ass people out there who really care about animal rights and they don't care about humans.
Yeah.
And that is messed up, you know? So that's kind of what I feel about it.
It's interesting. I'm just trying to figure out how I feel about, you know, there's a lot of sort of like, you know, philosophical issues that I feel like I know my own stance on.
Yeah.
And like what, you know, how exactly I feel about animals as opposed to humans and what, you know, I need to give them is something that I'm still trying to figure out for myself. I've been, you know, have been trying to eat less meat for years and I eat vegan probably like two meals a day, you know, but I have trouble going like, I do that for a lot of reasons, you know, for environmental reasons, for economic reasons, for, you know, there's a million reasons to eat less meat generally, for health reasons, right?
Yeah.
And those are all fine reasons to do that. And those are even good reasons if you want to go vegan all the way. I don't feel the need to do that, you know, personally. But there's still an issue of, you know, I'm like, well, why is it that, you know, I also understand the intuitive appeal of the argument. Just like you said, you know, all lives will matter when black lives matter, you know, that it's like that argument of like how we care for the least of us says the most about us kind of thing. I can see someone applying that to animals as well as being a plausible ethical argument. I'm just not sure where I am on it. So,
yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming to do the podcast.
Seriously, thank you so much for having me. I ran into John like a month ago, and he was like, we got to get you
on
the podcast.
John Wolf, our producer.
John Wolf, the producer. And he mentioned having me on the podcast, and I immediately kind of got like kind of anxious because I was like, okay, I really want to do that, but I don't want him to forget that like he said that. Is he going to remember? Are they really going to have me on? So when I got the invitation, I was like, yes!
It happened!
It happened!
All right, okay, well, I'll see you soon. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you once again for coming on the show, Haley. I hope you guys had fun. I certainly did. And that is it for Adam Ruins Everything, the podcast. We will be back in 2 weeks, so please tune in. Our producer is Shara Morris. And if you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about the podcast and subscribe to us on iTunes. If you've been listening this whole time and you haven't subscribed on iTunes yet, you haven't just gone back and clicked that you're listening in some kind of preview mode. You're like on your web browser and you're listening to this, but you haven't subscribed in iTunes yet. Just get over there. Subscribe in iTunes or Google Play or even, I don't know, Stitcher or whatever. Get yourself a subscription. If you liked it this much, to listen this far. Subscribe and you'll get more. You're going to have a great time. And please don't forget to leave us a rating or comment wherever you subscribe. That's the least you could do, to be honest. Again, Adam Ruins Everything. I don't mean to berate you guys. You know, we're on good terms. It's just you, okay? Everything and the Watch True TV app. Until then, we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.